Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host this afternoon. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. Once again, our focus is going to be on the two Florida cases concerning Haley Cummings and Kaylee Anthony. However, I am also hoping to expand our coverage to other missing and abused children and the subject in general. To help me in this quest, I have my beautiful wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
Joining us from Sin City, Nevada, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, what's new in the world of organized crime?
Good afternoon, everybody. Glad to be with you. And Simon, just lest I forget to tell you, I have to give a talk this afternoon, so I'll be bailing out on you after the first hour, but I'll be with you for that length of time, and I'm going to discuss what's happening in the world of crime.
That's the one thing I love about you, Denny. I mean, you can guarantee that when you're going to go and give a talk, it's going to be about some nasty subject. I mean, let me guess, you're going to have a mobster with you.
As a matter of fact, you're right on.
I thought so. We also have two guest panelists joining us today. Delilah Jones, and the quote from her bio, she is a voice for the missing and abused. She's also the creator and administrator of Victims' Rights and Crime Survivors blog Time's Up, and is the owner of Image Publicity. Delilah, thanks for taking time out to join us this afternoon.
Well, thanks, Simon, for having me.
Also on the panel, I'm very happy to welcome Jamie Levine. She's the founder and president of Mothers Against Predators. In part, her resume reads, "Technology in our digital world is impacting the lives of our children, and we must be prepared to create a safer environment." Jamie, I don't think that a truer word has been spoken. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon.
I also understand that you're currently running for a position in public office, the Broward County School Board.
Yes, I am.
Are you? And do you have high hopes?
Absolutely, I do. I have high hopes to change the standard that we've set for educating our children in Florida.
I think that is a fine, upstanding thing to do. As always, our phone lines are open. The switchboard number is 646-378-1120. And you're welcome to call in with your questions. And also, you're welcome to hang out in our chat room, and you can ask your questions there. Okay, let's get on with the program. Let's start with the Kaylee Anthony case. Earlier this week, some jailhouse letters were released. They were by no means legal letters under the Sunshine Law, that they were, in fact, letters between Anthony and one of her jailhouse friends, who she refers to as Kirky. She wrote about various topics, including accusations that her brother molested her when she was younger. That would be Lee. Plans for an RV trip when she gets out and Adams gets out. Fears that she may develop cancer. I'm not sure that Twinkie bars are really good for you, but I don't see how that could quite come into things. And how she has a crush on one of her attorneys. Oh, I couldn't imagine who that might be.
Well, if you count all the time that she spent with him, her main attorney, before she went to jail, that she did not hint.
Although an attorney for the Anthony family has denied any sexual impropriety. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Denny, I know you hate this case.
Yes.
I mean, what do you make of this latest nonsense?
Well, you pretty well nailed it. Nonsense would be, because I'm very biased when it comes to the Anthony case, all I can say is nothing surprises me anymore, be it rumor or truth, because even the rumors I don't put past these characters, so even the rumors could be true. And when I hear all this stuff, it just continues my annoyance with the whole crew. I'm talking about the defense side of things. And I will be tickled if and when this thing ever actually gets in a courtroom and we get people where they're sworn in and we start getting to the bottom of all the crap and find out who did what, when, and why.
Delilah, I know that neither you nor Jamie are particularly focused on the Anthony case. You both have a much wider net.
I vote
running
with Denny.
That would be a second.
Yeah. I think Denny nailed it. I really do. But one question that I have, and maybe you know, have they ever determined the paternity?
No. She's never told anybody who the father is. And I don't know if they did a paternity test on it or not, but she's never told anybody who the father of the baby is. I know they had one taken before. Jesse Grund had one taken that proved he wasn't the father, but nothing has been said about who the father actually is.
I noticed that there really hasn't been all that much speculation about it either.
No, but I sure would be interested to know that too, though, and I think it should be an important factor, but they haven't
released. I think they'd have to line up half of Orlando and have them all DNA tested.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm sorry, that was probably rude.
She probably doesn't even know who the father is.
What is that TV show where they do paternity tests and...
Oh, Maury Povich.
Maury Povich.
Who's the daddy?
Yeah, and we have Casey Anthony back for the 18th time.
But not give up. We'll help you.
it's so sad. The other thing that came out of these letters was an interesting little factoid that she relayed to Robin Adams, and it was about the circumstances that law enforcement found the body of her child wrapped in a baby blanket inside a black garbage bag. Now, according to the police, they didn't tell her that. Yeah? How did she get that information? Is she guilty? Oh, yeah.
That'd be my vote.
How else can would she have known that? I don't know. It's just, I don't trust her. I don't believe a word that woman says out of her mouth.
Well, you know, there's been so much back and forth with her parents, with her, with everything surrounding the case, lies after lies after lies. How can anybody believe anything she does say?
Right. She's made it impossible for anybody to take anything what she says to heart. You know, I mean, it's really, I don't know.
I'll tell you what,
okay.
Though, what really disturbed me is that when her mother and father both said straight out that that was the smell of a dead body in the trunk of that car. Simon, I don't know if you've ever smelled a dead body remains area, but that's an unmistakable odor. You can't excuse yourself and say that it must have been the pizza with the maggots. That smell was in that trunk. Two people who were close to her said that it was there. There's just no way it wasn't.
To me, this all sounds like a classic story of denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, denial by Casey, denial by the grandparents. There's something badly wrong. You're right. I have not smelled the smell of death, but I'm pretty certain it doesn't smell like pizza.
No.
Well, they should know that, though, in their business. She was a nurse and he was a cop. They should both
mm-hmm.
know better than to say it's pizza. They knew it was the smell of somebody dead. And
that's what's so incredibly incriminating, that they both had the ability to have known that smell.
And also, when Cindy Anthony washed the clothes, she
mm-hmm.
knew what she was doing. She knew very well what she was doing when she did that, because she knew that smell, she knew what it was, and she wanted to get rid of it. So that that's they claim is really a different smell than you'd smell anything else. And I hope I never smell it.
Well, so do I.
Well, do you think that it was an off-the-cuff remark that they made, not thinking ahead, of course, that anybody that had heard it or was listening to it would carry it as far as it went?
Well, I think she made that remark with the 911 call and then was sorry she did afterwards, because
mm-hmm.
they knew that it didn't come out like she wanted it to. And then it was kind of hard for her to back out and say it, because she couldn't say, oh, I didn't say that, because it was on the 911 call. I mean, very plain. But then she probably realized that it, you know, that could be incriminating to Casey, so she didn't want to be a part of it, or, you know, she didn't want to hurt her daughter. But
mm-hmm.
still, that's no excuse.
I think that there's another aspect here, and I'm not in any way trying to support George and Cindy Anthony, but try this on for size. All right, they have lost their granddaughter, and now they're on the verge of losing their daughter.
But that's happened before. Why should there be an exception, though?
Oh no, I'm not saying there's an exception. I'm just merely saying that might be part of the reason why they, you know, said what they said and have retracted.
No, it's still no excuse in my book. They knew exactly what they were doing, and I don't think they had anything to do with Kaylee disappearing, but I think that they knew before they even called, maybe, or after the call was made. They knew something had happened to that baby, and they helped Casey cover it up. I mean, everything they did was a cover-up. You can see it is plain as day, and I'm not even a law enforcement officer, but it's plain to see that they have covered up everything, every track she made. They make excuses for it.
And I think this goes way back, way, way back in their whole family dynamic. I think, you know, we're looking at a family that's been dysfunctional for a long, long time, and it's just coming out, the depth of it.
And if you really examine the dysfunction, in my opinion, Casey Anthony needs to be the center of attention and out there in the limelight, and that's why she does a lot of the things she does. And I think her family does too. I see no reason that the grandparents are running off to any missing child case that they can find to get involved with.
Yeah, they're doing that right now.
Actually, let's talk about that. That there's a little girl. Her name is Nadia Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
She's missing, and it's been a pretty hot story in the local area of Winter Springs, Florida. And guess who turns up to help?
Right.
Well, what do you think their motivation is? Do you think, you know, they're doing this out of the goodness of their heart, or do you think this is another media opportunity? I would hope it wasn't.
I don't think that it's the fact that they really care. Now, I'm not saying that they don't care, but I don't think that's their reasons. I think it's going to make it look like the Anthonys aren't the bad people that everybody thinks they are, that they couldn't be a part of a murder case.
I think it goes a little further than that. When you look back at some of the interviews that they did, they were compensated quite nicely for them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that being that they're losing everything that they have, they're looking for any way that they can to bolster their finances.
In. Well, after all this publicity about ABC, I think that's going to be kind
Correct.
Of hard.
Well, and too, there's a lot of damage control they need to be doing.
Well, that's true, too.
Can I ask a question?
Denny, of course.
Yeah, this is for anyone. Last I knew, I mean, at one point during this whole ordeal with the Anthonys, they had a PR person, a publicity person. Then I think they got rid of that one. I don't know, do they have anyone else now, an actual public relations firm representing them, or is the reason they've been somewhat muzzled or quiet lately, is that their attorney that's advising them, or who's counseling them on when and what to say?
That's kind of hard to say.
Yep, to the best of my knowledge.
I think Brad Conway's the only one involved, isn't it?
Right, yeah. He seems to be the only voice that they listen to, and they don't seem to listen to him very often.
No, I think they get their little spells, and they can't stand it. It's like it bursts inside them that they can't stand the quiet no more. They try to get involved again. So, but I do believe it's media that they're looking for. I don't believe that they're doing it completely out of their heart. I could be wrong, but I don't believe it. I don't trust them no more than I trust Casey. So,
Casey had to come from somewhere. Casey's whole personality had to be bred somewhere.
Well, her mother lies as much as she does.
Yes.
I mean, that's plain as day. You can see it in Cindy Anthony that she's lying when she talks about things. So, I mean, I don't believe nothing she says either. So, but like, to prove any of that, I can't. But that's my opinion anyway.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure if I got this from Jamie... Nadia Bloom. What do we know about her?
She's an 11-year-old girl. She went missing, and the immediate reports were that they felt that this little girl had walked off to pick flowers, and they were not overly concerned. Last time I checked, they had finally called in and checked on the sex offenders in the area, of which I have counted 36 on FDLE's site and over 75 on Family Watchdog. in a 5-mile radius of the elementary school to which the child attended. It is reprehensible and irresponsible and disgusting at best that a police department would even put that out there, that they felt that the child was out picking flowers. In North Florida, in Florida particularly, and it is my state and I am ashamed to say it, we have had too many homicides of children for us to take for granted a missing child. They weren't allowing anyone to volunteer for the search for at least 24 hours. They had 30 people searching in this huge area when they could have had a huge response right away. You don't put out in the news that a child may be picking flowers. You just don't take that chance.
Well, and even goes to like missing adults, and we've always said that if you look at this from the very beginning as a possible homicide case and get detectives out there working it like it's a crime scene. I know that missing children tend to get a lot more attention, you know, from law enforcement and other groups than missing adults do, but you almost have to look at things as a possible homicide first. I'd rather be wrong and have those detectives out there, you know, going over everything just like it's a crime scene and maybe find this child alive.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know how long it took them to take out the cadaver dogs. Perhaps, you know, that would have been a lesson they learned from Summer Thompson's case.
Jen, you looked up the Nadia story.
All I found really was that they said that there was no evidence of foul play and that they thought that she might have wandered off to take pictures because she had a new camera with her. But they found her bicycle. Her bike was standing up with the kickstand, and her helmet was hanging on the handlebars. And they said that there was no signs of anything else. So,
but Jan, there was no sign of a struggle with Summer Thompson either.
Right. Now, I'm not saying that they're right. I'm just saying that's what they put out. And I said, you know, to begin with, when was this, Thursday or Friday?
Friday.
But still, today's Sunday. I mean, a child out missing, you know, she can't be just lost out of these days. I don't believe that.
No, every minute that goes by is not good.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. She's only 11 years old. How can she fend for herself? She can't do it. So.
And if you look at the facts and figures, every 10 minutes can be another 50 miles of travel.
Exactly.
Simon?
Yes.
Jamie just mentioned the statistics of the sex offenders in the area around this girl's home. And I know we've discussed before, you have to keep in mind, those are only the ones in the system. How many more are out there that are reported. Same area that haven't been reported yet. And, you know, maybe could be on their first gig or something. So when you add that potential number into the known registered sex offenders, I mean, it's a very scary thing. And the point about treating these incidents as crimes or crime scenes initially, right off the bat, some of the things I'm involved with now are they're not necessarily young children, but they are or were someone's child. And it just amazes me the number of cases where there could be something other than an accident or suicide where that alternative possibility is never given any attention at all, where there's never an investigation or a crime scene established to look for evidence until after the fact. How much evidence is lost? How many cases are blown because someone arrives on the scene and says, it looks like a suicide to me, you know, and wings it. And it's just, upsetting to me.
Well, Jenny, where do you think the accountability for things like this goes? I mean, is it in the training of our police officers or the first responders on a scene like this?
Well, you know, Delilah, I suppose there's obviously training probably differs to some degree with jurisdiction and policy and procedure and so forth would differ. But the basics of it, I think, should be taught. So I've got to say that maybe there's a training issue maybe policy and procedure need to be strengthened or rewritten to allow for these things, because it's you never get a second chance to make a first impression, and when if you don't handle a scene properly, give it its due consideration at the time, once you blow that, it's gone. I mean, whatever evidence might have been there is now going to be contaminated or non-existent when somebody finally decides, hey, wait a minute, maybe we better take a second look at this. Well, then it probably, in 99% of the cases, is too late.
Yeah.
Correct. And if you go back to the Kaylee Anthony case for just a moment, and you look at the fact that that gentleman from the utility company had reported 3 times that he had seen something that looked like a body and the area was not searched, you have to look at the fact that I have really very little faith in especially Northern Florida's response time when it comes to children and crimes.
Oh, I think I can probably up you on that particular story. We were following a case out of Northern California, and we received a video that was the absolute worst child pornography I had ever seen in my life.
Well, you've never seen
God.
We didn't look at it but 3 seconds, and we cut
right.
it off.
And do you know how difficult a job it was to get someone's attention that this tape was doing the rounds?
Well, you know, Simon, I can say that's got to be true, because if it wasn't true, then the gentleman, I can't call him a gentleman. I have a tough time finding the right phrase for these monsters. Monsters would be it. The monster who killed Summer Thompson would never have been out of jail. He should have been in jail on August 10th when they had taken
right.
5 child pornography movies and 28 counts of child pornography off of his computer.
Yeah.
And then yet he was arrested
months after she was dead.
It was in February. She was gone missing, August 10th? And mm-hmm. they said that
she went missing in October. They had the computer in August.
Okay.
So August, September, they had 2 months to take this man off the street before that child died.
Right.
Very preventable.
Well, it was in February where he was charged in Mississippi with 29 counts of child pornography, and that's from there is when they extradited him to Florida, sent him
exactly.
to
Texas. So you're talking August, September, October, November,
right.
January, February, 6 months before
right.
they could actually put a guy that had 5 child pornography movies plus child porn on his computer away.
What's wrong with this system? And
Part of it is that we have elected sheriffs in Florida, and I am not one for that. I believe they should be appointed from a law enforcement background. We do not need politicians running our law enforcement agencies.
I like that. But, it just bothers me greatly. We were in possession of something that was most definitely illegal. We didn't want to have it in our place. And yet, we couldn't find anyone to actually take it off our hands.
In fact, someone had said you have to go to somewhere where the film was actually taped at. And, it was anonymous. We had no idea where it even come from. And they want us to have something done about it. They say, well, you got to go to the county where it was filmed. I said, well, that's not much help.
That's so untrue.
If you have
child pornography transferred to your computer, they don't ask you where you got it from so they can go after the other guy. They arrest you.
Well, actually, what we did, talk to the FBI. And it took, a week?
Yeah.
Before he finally called me back. And I explained to him that that we work on missing children cases a lot, and somebody had sent me this film of child pornography because she had got it, and she was worried sick about thinking it was this little girl that we were investigating in Florida. And we didn't really know it was child pornography video until we put it on. And then I freaked out. I didn't download it. I just opened it in my email.
God.
And I freaked out because I don't want that on my computer. Mm-hmm. And so that we decided to call for sure. And they said it's no big deal. Well, he finally called me back, and he asked me, he says, do you have the video now? I said, no. When I didn't hear from nobody, I deleted it. And I said, you know, it was in my email. I didn't download it, but it was opened on my computer. And he said, well, and I gave him the name of the lady that had sent it to me. I said, but I have no idea who it came from, and she doesn't either. So that's the last we heard of it. He took her name, and that's it. And he did ask me if I had the video on my computer. I said, no, I deleted it. And he said, okay. But it's on record that in case it shows up, if somebody would ever have to search my computer, it's on record that I did turn it in and we did delete it.
Well, so, Jan, why on earth didn't they ask you if they could take your hard drive and do a retrieval on it?
Well, the reason is because it was a woman that I gave her name to. I gave her name to them that had sent it to me. It was just a concerned citizen. I don't know how she got it. Somebody apparently mailed it to her, emailed it to her. And when she got it, it appalled her. And then she said, you know, she didn't know what to do with it. But they had told her the same thing about having to turn it in to the county where it was filmed at. And she told them she doesn't know because she don't even know, because I don't know who it was that sent it to her, but she didn't know the people or whatever. It's one of those things that they send, what do they call it? When they're
blindly?
Yeah, well, it's a whole lot of people. They're just a list of them. I can't remember what it's called. But
a blind copy.
But it's, no, well, I don't know. I don't remember. But I know it was a whole bunch of people. But I know I get emails from people that goes like alphabetically down the line to different people, and you can see that it wasn't picked directly to me, that it was just a whole list of people, like in my name's Janie O on my email. You know, they could have.
You did the complete right thing. You reported it. You can never have any repercussions from that. What bothers me is the response.
But it was the fact that how long it took them to do it, to get back with me.
In fact, when I didn't get a response within 24 hours, I went through the back door. And I know lots of strange people, and it took a really strange person, an ex-FBI wheel, who actually ran the investigation into Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. That was how I finally got someone's attention. Now, the average man in the street doesn't know, you know, Terry Turchi. The man in the street calls up, you know, his local police department. I mean, if it takes me a week to get someone to take notice, there's a big problem.
Huge problem.
I'm left speechless because it just tears me up to think that it took them that long, and then they wonder why people don't report things. You know, a lot of people know just exactly what they're going to get treated like, and then they're going to be treated like they're the guilty party. So people are scared to turn it in. A lot of people are afraid to turn it in because they're afraid that they're going to be blamed for having it.
Well, I've got some good news for you on that front. I was recently told by someone running for Congress that they have just about perfected technology that will track wherever child porn is downloaded to and from.
Well, that is good news.
Yes, it is. That will stop a lot of human trafficking. and a great deal of child porn, but technology is finally catching up with tools for us to combat the things that are out there with. Simon, you brought up the fact that things seem to be happening a lot more these days, and I would agree with you, but I would give you a reason why, if you would.
Sure.
Technology has made it not so much a backroom search. Now it's right out there in the public eye, where someone had to turn around and actually find someone of a like mind to get child porn from and talk to people in person, taking chances and doing high-risk crimes, getting kids in a position where they would molest them. They'd have to grab them off the streets and all those things. Technology has really made it a lot easier. Now you can just download it from the safety of your armchair.
That's good news.
No, that's very bad news.
Yeah, I think Jan was actually remarking.
I know that.
I was going back to what she said the first time. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was reading the chat room and trying to listen to it.
That's okay, Jan. I know you didn't mean that.
Oh, I'm not myself.
I read a book recently. The Cold... Cold Creek Murders or something, and it was all about a serial killer, and the crux of the book really involved technology and the fact that technology has made everything so much easier. It's so much easier to find people.
Mm-hmm.
So much easier to target people. And I think that's what you're saying. About the child thing. You know,
mm-hmm. And predators actually have their own chat rooms, believe it or not.
Yeah, I've heard that before, too, and I think that should be stopped.
Oh, it should be, but they do this little thing called freedom of speech. I may be... the most right-leaning term in the world. I don't like the ACLU, and I wish someone would remove them.
Yeah.
That's not freedom of speech. Our children have the freedom to retain their innocence, and that's way more important to me.
Well, it's an innocent child, and they shouldn't be exposed that way. They should never be treated that way. They shouldn't even be in that position to have to...
And technology is breeding a whole new generation of abusers. Now they don't wait till they grow up and have their own children. They go out and abuse each other. Now we have murders and killings and suicides because of technology every day.
Yes. In fact, there was one that's been on the news recently. It happened in January.
Deerfield Beach?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And little girl, 15, I think she was.
She was beaten within an inch of her life. She fell in a medically induced coma, and that other child's life is over forever. And what's a little known fact about that case is that she was actually taunting him because his brother had committed suicide. If she had not been able to do that in texting at school to a faceless victim who you can't see an emotional response from, if we could have stopped those texts, then perhaps we could have stopped that incident.
Denny, you've been very quiet, and I hate it when you go quiet because that means you've been thinking.
Yes, I've been thinking and steaming. Listening to this stuff, I think it was Jamie that mentioned she wouldn't be upset if the ACLU went away. I want to say my thoughts exactly.
Yay, Denny!
And if it comes to a point where some judge or judges or justices have to decide on a freedom of speech issue, it was just mentioned, does a child's safety outweigh a bunch of perverts having the ability to swap stories of their conquests on the internet.
Well, the ACLU spent years defending NAMBLA.
There's a few things that really tweak my buttons, and the Anthony case is one, and this subject is another. So, smoke coming out of my ears as I'm sitting here listening.
Okay, you mentioned NAMBLA. I know what it is, but other people might not.
Man-Boy Love Association. They teach men how to seduce young boys and tell them that it's perfectly normal and quite all right. They teach them what professions are best to be in. They teach them what they should offer them. They teach them everything they need to know to totally corrupt a minor's life forever.
And this is a registered association, as I understand it.
Correct. You can Google it.
Defended
and protected by the ACLU.
Doesn't it just make your blood run cold?
No, it makes it run extremely hot. I'm with the smoking ears here.
Okay. Let's talk about another dysfunctional family. The Haley Cummings case.
In my opinion, that child has been sold a long time ago into human trafficking to cover a drug debt.
Yep, that
case solved.
See? That easy.
Definitely one.
What would you do without me?
that is definitely one idea. I mean, BNN seems to be the only game in town that's willing to actually listen to the hours and stinking hours of jailhouse tapes that are being released. I think we dealt with something like 8 hours of them last week, and I know tomorrow I've got another 3 DVDs that will be hitting the airways. This family is totally dysfunctional. I mean, there's not one of them that I would like to invite over for dinner. I mean,
I wouldn't want them taking my garbage out. Forget dinner.
I'm
sorry.
How do these people even, you know, exist? That they can't walk.
Well, you know what bothers me? Well, how do they capture the attention of the media? I mean, yeah, there's enough drug, sex, and rock and roll to make it a great story, but you've got so much attention on Haley, Kaylee. What about the attention for so many other children out there that are missing, too?
That's a good question.
Or murdered.
A good question.
You know, right. Thank God for organizations like Peas in Their Pods who came together to bring attention to the children that are kind of falling through the cracks and not qualifying for an Amber Alert and not getting any media attention whatsoever. And yet the media, I blame them for a lot of this, carrying this story on and on and on to where it's like beating a dead horse. Somebody needs to get something done in those cases and get it done now.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go in defense of the media somewhat. That there's only so many cases. Our organization, Blogger News, we have very limited resources. I wish we could cover every case, but we just can't. I mean, what's the answer?
Well, you know, you've got the cases that hit all the hot buttons. And but what people don't realize is how many thousands of other children are out there missing, and who's doing massive searches for them? Whose law enforcement is digging deep into all the dysfunction of their families and what predators are around them?
You know, Delilah, that's one of the reasons why we're writing the book that we're writing, because it will teach families how to make it through this system and get the media attention that they need. Families need to be the first defense for their children. You need to open your mouth and never shut it. When your child's missing, it is your job to go out and be their press agent.
I think that's a very good point. Okay. Other missing children, abused children, and unfortunately deceased children. Summer Thompson, there's a good example. I mean, what's happening?
Well, that would be my hot button. I spent a week and a half up there researching the whole case in October. There's a lot that's not known about that case and how gruesome a murder it really was, but knowing the facts behind it makes me really question how cadaver dogs could have missed where that man was.
Do you want to explain that a little more?
Duh. Delilah says I'm not allowed.
Oh, okay.
You can't compromise the case.
The information that I had could actually compromise the case, Simon. Let's just say that there was a tremendous amount of blood evidence, an overwhelming amount.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
And the house that they put on the news with the contractors was never a police scene. They totally misled the public. They totally misled America's Most Wanted. I had a long conversation with John Turchin on my way back. They never suspected that there was any remains or any activity in that house at all. It was never taped up with police tape. They had multiple reports from multiple people of a guy around the neighborhood running around looking strange. A man that was at the vigil. They never put the pictures of any of the sex offenders that absconded from up there. Granted, they were not guilty, but one of them was actually related to the family. None of that news was ever put out correctly. And that would be the case of another elected sheriff.
Ouch. All right. Aya Johnson.
Asia. That's a sad case. I don't know what to say about it because it's terrible. It's really terrible. I mean, I'm trying to get what I've got. Okay, this little girl was taken. Her mother had taken her by somewhere, a relative or something, and they were staying in a little mobile camper in front of the house, a motorhome. And they found, when the family found them, they hadn't heard from them. They went to the motorhome to check on them. And when they opened the door, they found the mother dead. And the little girl was gone. And found out that her ex, well, it wasn't her ex, but they were separated. Husband had taken, they figured that they had taken off with, he had taken off with the little girl and took the mother's car. So, I mean, it went for, I don't know how long now it took them, but it took them a while to catch them, but they didn't catch them. They found them. They both were dead. And there's a lot that they haven't told. I really feel there's a lot more to this story that we haven't been told, because they claim that he was in the car dead and the little girl was on the ground outside the car dead. And I believe they found out that she apparently had her neck sliced. But they haven't really made a complete report as to what the cause of death is yet. But they found him in the car, and they claim that there was a knife on the dashboard along with a note, but they haven't released what's in the note yet. But, I mean, it's just kind of weird that they found inside the car three sections of rope and two knives and then 15 articles of clothing, they said. And outside the car was elementary notepaper with writing on it and a red plastic candy bag and plastic measuring cup and an automobile engine coolant reservoir. Now, that is what puzzles me. But Asia's father thinks he has a theory about that, and he says a coolant reservoir is where the overflow of the antifreeze goes. I noticed that he had a large knife on top of that car. I figured he used that to cut that container off with that and poured it into some soda pop and something, and gave it to Asia. So now they're waiting on a toxicology report to see if that could be, you know, anything like that could have happened. So, but it's really sad. I mean, this is an innocent child again. You know, I see it so much that it really tears my insides out. I mean, I care so much about these kids, but there's nothing. I mean, I don't know what else to do.
I think one of the things that I would like to very much revamp, revisit, and institute is a really good intervention program in schools and get teachers more training to recognize child abuse and do something about it. These kids don't go without being noticed. They go without being reported. Right. And, you know, whether you agree with their politics or not, the one statement that stands out clear in my mind that's so invaluable in today's economic society that we have, it takes a village. It takes a village so much because there are people that are working 2 and 3 jobs. And if we don't have a teacher on the front lines who's going to recognize that this child is behaving oddly and needs help and intervenes, then why do we have them there?
Oh, I agree entirely. But it's not just teachers.
No.
I mean, you know, we're talking a very big arena here. In fact, I see three very separate yet often enjoined areas. You've got abuse, you've got missing, and I hate to say it, you have dead.
Yep.
One does not always lead to the next, but, you know, it's like talking about drugs. You know, does pot lead to crack and crack to heroin? You know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, the question is, what can we do? What are we doing wrong? What can we do right?
I think a lot of it, Simon, is that there again we go back to the researching the case from the very beginning. The dots are there, the connections are there, and if first responders come in and they look at it in a particular way and they go over a crime scene in a particular way, then they're more apt to be able to connect those dots.
Okay.
But well, if you look at enough cases like that, you find that there are patterns, that there are certain things that you can almost pick out immediately. But are they looked at in depth?
I think a lot of times that those cases, Delilah, can be used as a blueprint for success when it comes to intervention. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'd like to see a lot more of.
I agree.
You know, yes, the first responders need to be way better and find the crime after the fact. My goal in running for the school board is to find the crime before it's occurred, to actually intervene, and to teach that intervention on multiple levels.
It goes to, like, the medical profession. If you've got to go more into prevention than waiting until something happens and then reacting to it. We've got to be more preventative.
Simon?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to leave here in a couple of minutes. Before I go, I can't help but mentioning this. You know, one of the guests today might be able to talk for just a second on a related subject, not about children necessarily, but about another troubling issue, which is domestic violence. And there's a new book coming out officially tomorrow that I think has potential to save the lives of some women who are in that situation. And perhaps before your show ends, Delilah could mention what that's all about, because it could be a real groundbreaking book. And I think it has potential to help an awful lot of people. So having said that, I want to thank everybody. It's been, Jamie, a pleasure. And Delilah, best of luck with your week. Simon and Jan, a pleasure as always.
Absolutely, Denny.
Thanks for being with us, Denny.
And I think the book he's talking about, I reviewed a couple of days ago.
Yes, you did.
Delilah, tell us about it.
Well, the name of the book is Time's Up, written by Susan Murphy Milano. This is a book for anyone who's in an abusive relationship and needs to get out safely. It covers a lot of areas, a lot of procedures that people just don't think about. And the most important thing I think that's in the book that's coming out is that evidentiary abuse affidavit, where there are specific forms for an abused person to fill out, and then they do a video. And it's testimony that will circumvent the hearsay laws, so that in a case like Stacey Peterson or Lisa Stebbick, or the two that come to mind, these cases would be resolved by now, because you have that woman's testimony. And, you know, the case can't go any further.
So, everyone, I have read the book, and it is a good read. So I'll make sure I include a link to the review and the Amazon spot when I write the wrap up for this particular program. Okay, let's go back to where we're going wrong. You see some abuse, and you know, one aspect that's been thrown out is we deal with it through education. But how would we change the education system to deal with abuse?
I believe that when a child is suspected of being abused, it has to be handled very, very carefully. You can't put that child in a spot to feel that they are going to be beaten up when they go home for telling the truth. And teachers are stressed to the max. We need a response team. I would like to see a response team, especially set up in my county, of a social worker and a medical personnel, people that would respond to this child and confidentially try and work through it with that child. And a psychologist, most importantly. I also think that it's important that, just as in murder cases with women, we take an example from that. When we have children that have been molested or have been abused, a lot of times, well, all the time, they're required to face their accuser in court. That has to stop. It absolutely has to stop. It puts families and children in extreme danger. Let's say we have an abusing father, and that father is abusing not only the child but the mother. That mother is going to be as petrified to report that abuse as the child is, and it's going to go covered up. We can't afford cover-ups, because we're going to demand that those people face their accusers. We need to provide another child to testify.
Okay, I'm going to put my wife on the spot here, and she hates it when I do this. in her teenage years, she was raped. She was raped, abused, and confined for 2 days, something like that.
I'm so sorry, Jan.
Thank you. I survived, though. But yeah,
and that's important. And you've gone on to be an advocate, which is even more important.
Well, I survived it. It wasn't good. I was beat up really, really bad, and he raped me three, four times. Right now, my mind's not exactly straight, but the last time, I passed out, so I don't know what happened the last time. I just, when I woke up, I was in his truck, dressed, and partially dressed, I guess you could say, and he was warning me that he would kill me if I told anybody.
Uh-huh.
And I knew the man. He was the father of my, stepfather of the boy that I was dating. And that was really, it was hard. It was very hard. And his wife actually helped me get away from him. And he kept me up in a trailer. And he put a padlock on the door at night so I couldn't get out the bedroom. And the windows in this little trailer was those I forget what they call them. But it was rough. I couldn't get out if I'd wanted to. And he'd get up in the morning before his wife would get up, because they put me in the trailer where they lived. And she'd get up, and she knew, but she was scared to death of him.
Right.
But she would try her best. He wanted to keep his eye on me the whole time. And finally, she found a way to get him away from me, for him to go somewhere to get supplies and stuff from where they owned a bar. And she told him that I couldn't go because she needed me there. And he whispered in my ear that I'd better be there when he comes back or he'll find me and kill me. And after he was gone and we knew he was gone, a man come in the bar that I knew, and I begged him, please take me. Well, I was in Mississippi, and I begged him to take me to Louisiana where my family was. And She told him to take me because I was in danger if he didn't.
Okay, the point is that you were scared to go to.
Oh yes, I was scared. Well, I did. Well, finally did, but they laughed at me and said, "Oh, well, it's just your word against his," because he was well known in the city. Well, it was a little town, and he was well known, so they said there's no way he would have done this, and he had a lot of money, and he could buy his way through everything. And they actually laughed at me and said they wouldn't even take a report on it, because they said that it was just my word against his. And I was young; I was only 18. I was a virgin. I didn't have no idea what to do about it. I couldn't face nobody. I thought, I felt dirty. But I went to Slidell and found my sisters, and they stayed there. I stayed with my sister. And the man did come find me. And when he pulled into the driveway, my sister's boyfriend jumped out the house and with his gun, and he told with his shotgun, and he told him, if you step one step closer to her, I'll blow your brains out. And he got in his truck, and he left. And I lived in fear for a long time, but no, I couldn't get the cops to help me. I mean, it was years later, as a matter of fact, about 7 years ago, that I ran into him again, and he was making remarks about having a good time again, and I got in my car and I ran. I ran straight to my daddy's house, and my dad told me, well, he took me to the police department, and they put a peace bond out on him, saying that if he stepped into Louisiana again, that they would, if they caught him, they would arrest him. But the case was so old that they couldn't go back and prove anything, so they said that it was too late, actually, to accuse him of rape because I had no proof. But they did put a peace bond out on him.
That's not true. You do have proof.
Well, that's what
you have his wife. Is his wife alive?
Well, she's there, but she wasn't a witness to it. She was a witness after, but she wouldn't have testified against him anyway. She was.
How about the guy that took you out of there?
I don't remember his name. Well, as a matter of fact, I never seen him again after that. Mm-hmm. He was just a regular customer that was in and out, but I don't know who he was. I don't remember. Well, I knew his name at the time, but right now I couldn't tell you his name at all or what he even looked like. I was so messed up.
I think the point here is that people are scared. Kids are scared.
Absolutely. Petrified.
I was scared to take it any further. I really mm-hmm. took him for his word that he would kill me if he caught me. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I was literally afraid, scared to death of him.
And that's what children go through every
exactly.
day.
Exactly. Well, I feel every like I was 18 years old, and I was totally took by surprise, shock, and it really took a lot out of me. I think now what a child would think of being raped. I mean, these poor little innocent children that can't even try to fight back. I tried, but I failed. But at the same time, a child can't get that far with it. And
no,
it makes me sick to my stomach to see these kids going through that, and that's just so not necessary. They shouldn't have to go through this.
No, and it's got to change. The way that these kind of reported and prosecuted has to change. One of the things I'm fighting for is a federal standard for prosecution and a dedicated court to sex offenders and abuse. We can't have regular judges handling these cases or regular prosecutors. They need to know what they're doing. They can't make the victim feel like the criminal. It's really important to be able to empower victims. I don't know if you're familiar with my background or why I do this, Simon, but my daughter was a victim of an online predator when she was 12. He was not your average online predator, if you want to call them that. He was actually a terrorist from Pakistan. The case was not handled correctly. I believe that was because they got a lot more information on the human trafficking ring that he would have sold my daughter into. A lot of that goes on to feed Al-Qaeda, a lot of it. My daughter was molested not only by this guy who told her that if she did not return the next day that she would find my head on a stake on the front lawn, and he knew where her brother went to school. So she understood the fear factor really well, Dan. But she was molested again by the court system, who had him in jail for 21 days with a full confession on video and allowed him to walk out of jail, no bail, no bond, no anything else.
But you see similar cases, you know, maybe not a terrorist.
But the same.
Exactly.
They're all terrorists, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all terrorists. They're terrorizing our children.
That's exactly right. They are. But, I mean, they let them out. They let the ones that are so guilty out, and the ones that, you know, you can't really have proof against them,
mm-hmm.
they're the ones
mm-hmm.
that are sitting behind bars. But
yeah.
I don't understand.
And some of them don't even want to get out. Cooey did not want to get out of jail. People forget that. He didn't want to leave jail. He knew what he would do.
Yeah, well, that...
Whenever he just says,
please keep me, you know.
That's
and then
right.
they let him out anyway.
That's right.
I don't
and then
they
just had another case in South Florida where Dennis Siegel and another prosecutor, God bless them, the man came to them. He had killed a girl in the 70s. She was a 12-year-old little girl. And he was released. He had served his time and said, I don't belong on the streets. And went to the prosecutors and said, help me. They put him in a temporary situation now, at least, where he's in a Veterans Administration hospital under psychiatric care. We need to have a provision for the people who know that they're going to go out there and do this
right.
to be allowed to stay in jail.
That's really ridiculous to have to think that, though. But you're right. You're right.
Okay. But we've had a couple of people sitting on the line for forever. And I do apologize for the long wait, but it was such a great conversation. Area code 702, you're on the air. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
My name is Jay. My comment is for Tricia. You know, she's talking about the teachers reporting the abuse. I know for a fact that teachers have reported the abuse, but because the social workers are now are getting few and far between because of budget cuts, and then they're getting falling through the cracks, and then they will be investigated, and then the worker doesn't find anything wrong, and they go back to the parents, you find time and time again that these children who go back have been cleared by the social workers, and then things happen, and it falls back onto the social workers.
I totally agree with you, and it's shaming, not Tricia, but that's okay. You're right, which is why I want a response team. It shouldn't be put on the teacher's shoulders. They have enough on their plate.
That's
we need more social workers in our schools. We need a team that's going to respond that's qualified to deal with abuse. The teacher's responsibility should merely be to educate and to report. The teachers do report. I totally agree with you, and believe me, I'm a teacher advocate. But we need a team to back the teachers up. They shouldn't be left out there alone.
Okay, thank you.
You're very
welcome.
Thank you, Colin. And let's take another caller. Oops. Ah, switchboard's being slow.
The next one.
We have someone coming in from the 757 area code. 757? Are you with us?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for everything you do, Simon and Dan.
No problem. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
This is Mitzi. I have several questions regarding the recent tapes that you got out there for the public. Thank you so much, Timmy and Lindsay. I had some questions. She had mentioned that she had given Lee some new information. Do you happen to know what that new information is in one of the conversations she had with Tommy?
Nope, absolutely not.
And
if I did, I'd be keeping it secret and wanting to shout exclusive, bombshell, and all the rest of it.
Oh, okay, the next question is, I found it interesting that she said she threw away Tommy and Timmy's work boots.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That would be an interesting case.
Yes, it's in one of the phone calls or jail visits on the website.
The question is, why would she be doing that?
That's what I'd like to know. I found that pretty interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, Tommy doesn't talk to me every day.
Well, I'm just bringing up little snippets from the audios that you put up on the website that I appreciate so much that you guys did that. You're the only ones, actually, who have them.
Oh, we have three more DVDs, so that's going to represent probably 3 days of absolute grief trying to convert them into something that is usable online. But hopefully we will have those early tomorrow. So you can expect a whole schwack more of these audio tapes.
Oh, that's great. And one more question. Is there any reason, I mean, is Lee not releasing, or are the jails not releasing anything on Ronald Cummings? Is that the reason why we're not hearing anything? Are they holding that back, or would you be able to get some of those on your website as well?
That is an interesting question, and it's one that I have asked several times, and the answer is confusing. The St. John's people are more than happy to comply with the Sunshine Laws. You know, DVDs come out almost weekly, or at least two weekly. Ronald's actually in Putnam, and they don't seem to be nearly as keen on not necessarily compliance with the Sunshine Law, but they just don't want to talk to the press. So, don't know.
Okay, well, that's kind of odd, because with the Sunshine Laws, if they're requested, they should be released. They can't hold it back, can they?
Well, they have to. They can release something involving in the case as long as somebody is arrested and charged with the crime. In Haley's case, they haven't been. Nobody has been arrested, so they can hold back any information about her.
There's been redactions in all of the tapes that that I have seen, because that there are two very separate investigations going on. One is the search for Haley Cummings, and that is most definitely not part of the Sunshine Law.
Right, but the drug charges are, and that's what's confusing me.
The drug charges are. I honestly don't know how to answer your question. We've been hoping for weeks and weeks and weeks to get something out of Putnam, but the PCSO, they're nice people on occasions, but they tend to keep everything very close to their vest.
Okay, is there any way that you could request these audios?
Oh, they have been requested.
And they're just not releasing them.
We're still waiting.
Okay, and one more last thing. I know I'm taking up your airtime. Sorry about that. Also in the audios that you released on the 8th, I think it was, with Tommy and Lindsay, there was mention that Timmy had failed a polygraph as well. That's the first I've ever heard of that.
I have no background information on that. I suspect it might have been, or might possibly have been, a slip of the tongue. I can't quite see why that they would want to give Timmy a polygraph, but, you know, who knows?
And Tommy was supposed to take one, and do we know the results of that yet, or are they also holding on to that?
Actually, you bring up an interesting subject, and it was one that another website was talking about, you know, exclusive bombshell, all of that bullshit. Tommy actually took not just a polygraph, but also a voice stress analysis test at the same time that Misty did, which was, what, a year ago? Well, months ago. We absolutely do not know the answers. And you're certainly not going to get any answers from Putnam County.
Okay.
So there's a little exclusive bombshell for you.
Yeah, I love those little exclusives. I love how they put them out there after it's already been out on the web everywhere. Thank you so much for not using that, by the way.
We try not to.
and keep up the good work. Thank you so much. I'll get off the line, so if there's somebody else on hold. Have a great weekend,
thanks,
everyone.
Colin. You too.
And you. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right. Well, let's go back to what we were talking about. How to prevent, how to find abuse. CPS. Are they effective?
I'm sorry, Simon. No, they're not.
Yeah, I totally completely agree.
I just found that an amusing question. No, I don't believe they are. There have been too many cases where children have died after they've been out the door.
But don't they also come in,
well, they,
you know, later in the case? I mean, we're in the whole...
You know, I'll tell you how ineffective... I'll tell you how ineffective they are, okay? I dealt with a case in Boca Raton of a man accused of molesting his fourth victim. The last two had been in the 4.5-year-old range. They were so ineffective that when it was reported that this child had seen child porn on this guy's computer, and he had asked her to service him, let's say, and then it had his son service him when she refused to in front of them, his son is still in the house. On top of that, because the police went into the house and seized the computer without a warrant, even though they downloaded 59 counts of child porn off of the man's computer after he had already swept it, he was released once again because of a lack of evidence. Why? Because we go back to the same subject of fear. That 4.5-year-old was not going to be permitted to testify by her parents because she could not face her accuser in court. And they don't use videotape testimony, which is wrong.
All right. So pretty much you're saying, you know, CPS fails on occasions and maybe fails on many occasions. Are there softer approaches? Are there resources out there that people can reach out to?
Not enough of them. No. In the budget crunches that we have there, there's fewer every day.
Okay. Education. That's been mentioned a couple of times. You know, we need to educate children. The law enforcement have been running the DARE program for, oh, I don't know how many years. That's about drugs. Do they need to get into the abuse side and start an abuse system in our school system?
Yes, they absolutely, absolutely have to. And we can't do stranger danger anymore because stranger danger doesn't work. A lot of the times it's someone that we know, someone that we're close to, and we don't want to see it. So we have to address the fact that this could be someone that you love, someone that you care about. It can't always be a stranger. And strangers are also online now and a lot more frequently. And the education that's out there for children on how to defend themselves online is just inadequate. And the information that's there for parents on how to protect their children on a computer is inadequate. We need to readdress it for modern times.
Okay, how do we get to the parents? Because, you know, it's a trickle-down world. Yeah. If you get to the parents and you explain the problem and you give some solutions, maybe they can trickle that down to the children.
Mm-hmm. Well, I educate on a regular basis groups from PTAs, churches, etc. And if anyone out there listening would like to schedule something in their neighborhood, I will gladly come and speak at their schools and help them to educate the parents on how to protect their children.
That would be good. If more,
what do you think about self-defense classes for children?
I think they should be mandatory. I think that PE is the last thing we need to drop out of our school's educational system, and that part of it should be self-defense.
I have interviewed two authors recently. They're both educators. They both have books out on the educational system, and they both say the same thing, that the No Child Left Behind initiative has created absolute havoc. We have now reached the stage where the only thing taught in school is math, English, and that's about it. There are no electives. There's no opportunity to teach social skills.
Correct. And why is it that we see children interacting with each other with death in their mind? It's because we don't allow them, the electives, to release their stress in. These kids are in a pressure cooker. This economy has affected way more than their parents. It's affected their homes. It has affected them. The world of technology has affected their homes and has affected them. And we take away their stress release. We take away their ways to express. You know what? In my opinion, an art teacher or a music teacher is probably going to be the first one to identify an abused at-risk kid. Because that abuse, those fears come out in their artwork. And how can we take away physical education? That's their stress release. If we see a child overreacting in a game situation when we're trying to teach them team sports, well, maybe there's a problem. Maybe that aggression comes from somewhere. Maybe that aggression needs to be addressed.
Well, I do have a problem other than the education with the kids that I have seen several times with these children that have been murdered or molested, is the mothers allowing a sex offender to be living in their home along with that child, knowing that they were a convicted sex offender. And the child winds up being either molested, kidnapped, and murdered, or something to that effect. Now, that's, they have to have some more stricter laws on the sex offenders to make sure that they're not that close to these children or have that access to these children. And I think the laws should be make it a lot stricter because of that.
Absolutely. But here's another solution. How about when you go through your class on separating and parenting, the divorce class that they make you take, how about we add another class in there for the moms on how to identify a sex offender that's trying to date you to get to your children?
Oh, I don't know, but they should definitely be taught something.
Well, I think the first line of defense is right before a woman becomes single to teach her to be very careful when she enters the dating world, because it's an absolute known statistical fact that sex offenders will friend and get close to a single woman to get close to her children without a dad around.
Now, that's what most of them are planning. You know, they see this nice little girl, a nice little boy. I get the mother's trust, and I've got it made then.
That's right.
And then they threaten the children not to say anything. So it definitely should be something done about that.
Okay, I have to wrap this program up. We're just about out of time. I do want to go once around the table and ask everyone for their final thoughts. Delilah, what's your final thoughts on today's show?
Well, I think we need to really stress the preventative end of abuse, of everything we've talked about today. Rather than reacting to something that's already happened, we have to do something before it happens.
Jamie.
Mm-hmm. I have to thank you so much, Simon, for bringing everything that you've brought to light. It's been an absolute pleasure being on the show with you. And I agree. It's all about prevention, education, and proper reaction to a crime scene, proper reaction to an abuse situation, and definitely stopping electing our sheriffs.
I like the idea of not electing sheriffs.
Thank you so much.
Jan.
All I can say is I know the subject wasn't strictly on Haley today, but it's basically about child abuse alone. And we have to remember that Haley is one of these cases, whether or not we know it.
Yes.
I mean, we don't know what happened to Haley. But there's so many children out there that need to be protected. And since we don't have nothing on Haley right now, I mean, why not just, you know, go into these subjects and try to help the other kids before it happens to them again? I mean, that's my opinion.
My ambition, it's a glorious ambition, is that we can actually cover a lot more of these stories. I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know, you know, where we're going to get the resources from. But we've got to do something. I do want to thank you all for joining us this afternoon. It's been a great discussion, and I do hope that we can do this again, because I think there is so much more that we could talk about.
Anytime, Simon. Always available for you.
This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a great afternoon. Goodbye.
Thank you for being here with
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Simon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Simon. Great show.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Jan.